even seasonally, we need to change what we're eating, higher healthy carbs, lower healthy carbs, higher fat, lower fat. I mean, all of these things, I believe, is variations that really we know now can actually change your microbiome, turn off bad genes. So varying your diet is, I believe, as important, if not more important, than even the diet we eat, monthly, weekly, and seasonally.
This is the Medicine Podcast. I am Mimi, Mushroom Queen, AHCC educator, and culinary nutrition expert. I am quite obsessed with providing the unique knowledge for those that want to prevent disease in their body, in their mind, and in their relationships. If that's you, then you are in the exact right place, my love. Let's go take the medicine. Hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day you are listening to this. I'm so glad you are sharing part of your precious time and day with me on The Medicine. Today, I am interviewing the incredible and knowledgeable Dr. Daniel Pompa. Dr. Pompa has had his Doctor of Chiropractic degree for 25 years now, but what he's most known for is true cellular detoxification and healthy fasting protocols. His approach to helping people get well is far from the average conventional allopathic Western medicine doctor. Rather than chasing symptoms with medicine, Dr. Pompa focuses on addressing the root cause of disease. He has his own kind of insane healing story, which he gets into right from the start in our interview. But for over 3 years, he was suffering from debilitating anxiety, insomnia, brain fog, panic attacks, mood swings, irrational anger, ringing in his ears, and even more than that. And one of the things he utilized for his healing was fasting. And that's where we really focus today in this episode, fasting for cellular health and longevity. If you're anything like me, you've probably heard a lot about fasting as it's become kind of more mainstream. But like anything else in this space, it can get diluted with really bad information or just incomplete information. I was definitely a victim of this a few years ago, of the bad and incomplete fasting information. You'll hear about my story all in this episode and my negative experience with intermittent fasting, which I have found out since then is a really, really common situation for younger, fertile women who try intermittent fasting. So today, Dr. Pompa and I dive into exactly what I was doing wrong and what so many other women do wrong that causes hormone imbalance and dysregulation associated with their fasting. We talk about how women in their fertile years can fast weekly, monthly, or seasonally the right way. We talk about, should fasting be used for weight loss? Why diet variation is so critical, and common myths of fasting. And then I actually give Dr. Pompa a couple case studies, specific scenarios for him to do kind of some on-the-spot coaching. And one of them had to do with gut health and dysregulation, which is so unbelievably common right now. So I highly recommend listening until the end because he gave some really great nuggets for getting gut health back and how to utilize fasting. You guys, I came out of this interview just on cloud nine because it was so jam-packed with amazing information that I feel like it can help almost every human. If you are interested in his fasting protocols, I highly recommend his book called Beyond Fasting. The link and discount code will be in the show notes below, so definitely check that out. Then, if you would, please send this episode to someone you know. That's really how this good, complete disease prevention healing information spreads the quickest, is by people like you helping us do that. So I thank you in advance. So much gratitude for you. One more really cool thing before I let you get into this amazing interview. If you want to hear more from your girl, here's someone interviewing me Right before we did this interview, Dr. Pompa actually interviewed me on his podcast called Cellular Healing Television, which has actually been one of my favorite listens lately, probably for like the last month. So, so good. But I'm recording this intro the day after we did our interview, so I'm not exactly sure what number episode it will be on his podcast. But as soon as I know, I will update the show notes below. So you can and should definitely check that episode out on Cellular Healing Television, because you guys, not to toot my own horn, but sometimes you know you crushed the thing, right? Right. Enjoy this jam-packed interview with super badass healer, Dr. Daniel Pompa. Bye.
You guys, I have such a treat for you today. I am so excited to bring you Dr. Dan Pompa. He is incredible. He is quite the authority when it comes to cellular detox and fasting. He is a wealth of knowledge, and I want you to help me welcome him to the medicine today. Welcome, Dr. Dan.
Thank you. I feel welcomed.
Good. So I have a lot of questions for you today, and even some specific scenarios when it comes to fasting, because like anything else in the health and wellness space, there's a saturation of, for lack of a better term, crap, where it's not good information, and sometimes it can even hurt people. Yeah. So I really want to use your expertise and your knowledge in this space to really provide valuable information for people who are interested in fasting. Sound good?
Awesome.
Perfect. The first question I always ask any guest on The Medicine is, what do you love? What aspect of your life do you love so much that you wish you could gift to every human?
There's a lot there, and that's a loaded question. Let's see. The gift to every human is the part that would differentiate this answer from others. You know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. It's the healing that I got myself. You know, honestly, because you know, my greatest fear is going back to where I was when I was sick. That's what drives me, honestly. And you know, as being a healthy person now and staying healthy, that my diet, my detox, everything, fasting strategies, everything I teach and preach, I do myself. And it's not discipline that keeps me there. It's the fear of being sick again. So what I would love to gift to everyone is that healing, you know, is that knowledge and knowing, you know, of how to keep your health and how to get your health back.
Yeah, I love that. Well, you read my mind, because my next question is, you have an amazing healing story, and I know a whole podcast could be on just your healing story, but, you know, give us a synopsis of what you went through and, kind of high level, high point. How did you get to where you are now, being the physically fit and top notch person that you are?
Yeah. You know, look, when I got sick, I was probably in the best shape of my life. And all of a sudden, life came to a screeching halt. And like most, it just started with fatigue. And I thought I was overtraining. And then it went from fatigue to bizarre symptoms. I mean, debilitating anxiety, these weird headaches, food intolerances, couldn't explain, insomnia, panic attacks. You know, my adrenals and thyroid were shot. So I was trying to really just support those things. And I mean, some things may have gotten better, but I was getting worse. I definitely, you know, was going this way, not this way. So, you know, I mean, honestly, it took me years to figure out the cause. As my life went this way, you know, I wasn't the father I needed to be. And I had a very busy practice at that time. And I literally dreaded going to work, laying down in between patients, and wow. You know, just, yeah, it was not a good life at all.
How long did that last? I was looking for an answer.
You know, I mean, that it was 3 or 4 years of just debilitating, right? Wow. I mean, just not knowing. And then once I found the upstream cause, then it got a little bit, there was at least hope anyway. You know, and it just fast forward, it was mercury in my brain.
Oh my God.
Now, where did it come from? It came from these silver fillings that have been in since I was a little kid. And then I also wore contact lenses in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. It had thimerosal, which is mercury derivative in it, and I was going into my brain. My father loved methylate, which was loaded with mercury. Every cut I had, he put it on. But, I think all of us have a lot of different sources today. Number one is our moms. You know, I'm sure I got a lot of that from my mom, looking at her health history as well. But, my bucket overflowed when I got two silver fillings removed, which contained 50% mercury. And that's when the fatigue started. But I just didn't know it. You know, at one point I was online looking and I found Mad Hatter's disease. And if you don't know what that is, your listeners, but they were making felt hats and they were using mercury as a part of the process. And they were known as Mad Hatters. So when I looked at the symptoms, I was like, I have every one of these. And I went and got a blood test. It was negative. Mm-hmm. It was a year or so later, I was working with a very bright endocrinologist trying to deal with my thyroid and my adrenals. And he said, Dan, I think you have mercury toxicity. And I was like, I thought so too, but I did a blood test. He said, wrong test. That if you were a Mad Hatter, meaning getting exposed every day to mercury, that test would be positive. But I think it's a chronic exposure in your deeper tissue. So challenge it out with a chelator and then let's see what that yields. And that led to some elevated, not just mercury, but other metals as well. And so then I traced it back to when I got the fillings out, that just set my bucket overflowing. But as I said, I had been accumulating this for many years. That just kind of dumped my bucket overflowing. So that's my story.
Oh, gosh. So where did you even start once you figured out what was wrong? Where did you even start? Because I think a lot of people have maybe not as severe symptoms, but maybe some of those, and they resonate with what you're talking about. They're like, well, I just feel tired all the time. Isn't that normal? Yeah. Isn't that life? What would you say to the average person that's having some of those symptoms?
Well, there's a reason for it, right? You're not just unlucky. And I'll tell you today, it's not just diet. Most of the people that I still coach back to health, and I still do some of that. I'm training doctors around the world. And by the way, everything I learned during that, I teach now. But I say that the perfect diet won't get you well today, but you won't get well without a perfect diet, whatever that is. But the point is that it's a deeper upstream issue of these neurotoxins that are making many people sick. And fatigue and just brain fog, anxiety, hormone dysregulation, that's where it starts. So what I would say to you is look upstream. Mm-hmm. Hidden sources like mercury, are very common starting with those symptoms. Hidden infections, root canals, cavitations, where you had wisdom teeth out. Years later, they form an infection deep in that jaw. And they make people mysteriously sick. And mold illness make people mysteriously sick. You don't see mold typically. It's water damage years ago. I don't know the mold's behind the wall. So those are some things that you have to uproot and look for. And that's what I teach.
So you are a doctor that teaches doctors. If somebody's like, man, I need to figure this out, do they start with blood work, or how would they even find the doctor that would be able to help them in the way that you got help?
Blood work is very limited. You can look at a major disease process. Whoa, your liver enzymes are up. There's maybe your C-reactive proteins up, showing you're systemically inflamed. But hormones, they're very transient. Certain, you can't look at nutrient deficiencies in blood necessarily. Certain ones like fat-soluble vitamin D, you can't. But, it's not going to show, as I mentioned, blood work was what I did, and it didn't show my level of toxicity. So it's limited. I think that coaching, when you go to my website, it talks about how to look for a coach. Train these coaches. And, I still do some of it myself too, but you can go to my website and that will direct you. Coaching services, you just click on that. And my website's Dr., like Dr. Dr., then my last name, pompa.com.
Great. Yeah, we'll definitely list that in the show notes, because I think that's almost as overwhelming as the symptoms. It's like, where do I even start
right.
for people? and their general practitioner may have very limited tools and options for them. Mm-hmm. I hear that all the time. So that's great. We'll list that in the show notes. I do want to transition, because you are such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to fasting. Mm-hmm. And I have my own historical kind of bad taste in my mouth from myself doing it wrong with all these great intentions, right? I heard when I was enmeshed in health and wellness podcasts and really like getting addicted to like self-development and learning about medicinal mushrooms and all these things, it's almost like a waterfall of information, even though it's all from a good place. You know, Ben Greenfield, where he's like, this is a good source of information, but I was doing it in the wrong way. And so I had a really negative experience with intermittent fasting specifically. And I know that this situation is not unique. I, you know, did a post on Instagram kind of telling my story a little bit, and I had countless women being like, that was me, or this is me now. So if I could just paint you the picture, because this is a really common problem, I think, especially for young women, in their, you know, fertile years. And I want to just present this and then have you poke holes in it and tell me everything that I did wrong and what I should have been doing. Is that okay?
Sure. I love it.
Okay. So I was 28 years old, active dental hygienist, working out 6 times a week, HIIT, lifting, cardio, all the things. And I also had a very active job, and, you know, I heard about intermittent fasting. I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to do that. And then I started doing it in the way of, I would have my coffee in the morning. Sometimes I would add, you know, medicinal mushrooms or maybe some ghee. And then that's all I would have aside from water, maybe some vitamins or something in the morning until 1 p.m. And then I would have my lunch, which was usually like a raw kale salad with like salmon or chicken and a whole bunch of raw veggies, which I thought was super clean, super good. And then I would usually go home, work out, and then I would have dinner. So I was having 2 meals a day, and I would go to bed at like 9 p.m. So 2 very clean, very lean meals. I did this for about a year, and I was seeing external results in that I got super, super lean. I had visible abs, but I also had zero estrogen and horrible fatigue. Like by 1 p.m. I couldn't even like talk to my patient, and I couldn't understand why this good thing that's supposed to be intermittent fasting was not yielding the results that I thought it would be, which was like, oh my gosh, amazing thought, no brain fog. Like I feel amazing. I think so clearly, longevity, all these things that you hear. Was not experiencing that. And then got really, really sick and had to now nurse my hormones back to health. And really I've stayed away, being all totally transparent, I've completely stayed away from any type of fasting because, again, like you said, like that fear of going back to where I was, because I relate being sick to intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. But I know there is so much good in it. So I want you to poke all the holes and tell me what I should have been doing and how I can kind of proceed from here, because I do want those longevity benefits.
Yeah. Look, this is more common with women than men. It's more common with women at certain phases of their life. Perimenopause, not that you're there yet necessarily, but I'm just for educational sake, right? You know, people with thyroid conditions, adrenal conditions, this is more common. So women in general, this is more common. Okay, so you fit a couple of those categories. People that work out extremely hard, you fit that category too. I address this in my book, Beyond Fasting, in 2 chapters. And because this is so prevalent, you needed diet variation strategies, which I call feast famine strategies. So as important as the famine is, in this case, the fast, right? Well, feasting becomes even more important for the groups that I just mentioned, which simply means you would have remained successful, staying lean, looking the way you look with these variation strategies. Okay, so I have weekly strategies, monthly strategies, and even seasonal. So what happens is the body will think it's starving at a certain point, and it goes into a save your life starvation mode. Well, how do we prevent that? Well, we prevent that by feast days, times of feasting. Mm-hmm. So for your set of circumstances that you mentioned, I would highly have recommended 2 or 3 days a week of feasting. So what does that mean? Not as low carb, perhaps higher protein, and perhaps more meals those days. So feasting could mean higher calories those days, higher carb or higher protein, which emulate and tell the body it's not starving. Mm-hmm. Because with the fasting and your activity level, your body was thinking it was in a starvation mode. And yeah. that becomes problematic for many different things. And even some people, happened to me, I even slowed down fat metabolism and I was storing belly fat, and my carbs were getting less and less and less. And my fasting was getting more and more narrow in my eating window. Yeah. I was getting more disciplined with worse results. And then when I started adding feast days in weekly, it transformed me. Same thing happened to Joe Mercola. I had a conversation with him at a seminar in Florida, and he was getting weaker in the gym, losing muscle. And I explained, you need more feast days. So you were fasting in a window, maybe you were eating in, I don't know, 4 to 6 hour window, but you needed to add feasting. For some people, one feast day a week is transformative. And some people need 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So somewhere I would look at your activity level, your discipline on your diet. I would say you probably needed at least 2 feast days a week where you're eating higher healthy carbs, maybe more sweet potatoes, yams, you know, more fruit, berries, whatever it is. But you needed to feast more, getting your carbs at least up to 150, 200 grams, which is probably very high for you. Yeah, you're like, oh yeah, that's a feast
day. Yeah, it's high for me now.
Yeah, exactly. But those feast days are as important as the fast. So when people just try to intermittent fast every day, it becomes a problem hormonally. And that's exactly what happened. Now let's look at another strategy I discuss in my book, monthly variation. What we've learned, especially for women, the category of, you know, who you are, 5 days before their cycle, you make a lot of hormone transitions. You take active thyroid hormone inactive from T4 to T3. That conversion takes insulin. That takes higher carbs to drive up insulin, and then insulin helps the conversion. Estrogen conversion, you need higher insulin. So ladies, most of your cravings will come a week before your cycle. Why? Because the innate intelligence knows exactly what it's doing. So here you are during that hormone conversion time, which, by the way, these conversions matter all month long. And you are fighting, I'm sure because you're very disciplined, off the cravings, saying, I know better than you, innate intelligence. So you fought through it. You stuck with your 6 hour eating window, you know, you're fasting for whatever hours you were doing, and you bullied right through it, but your body won in the end because it slowed down these hormone conversions. You ended up with low estrogen, thyroid hormone, I'm sure got to be a problem. Yeah. So all of that could have been avoided with 5 days of feasting right before your cycle. Feast, famine. The rest of the month you could have did your intermittent fasting and you'd have been just fine. So that's monthly variation. Now seasonal. I believe, you know, the worst thing we can do is stay on the same diet all the time. It's a very common mistake. Now, I don't hang my hat in the keto camp, paleo camp, vegan, vegetarian. All those are camps where people camp out and they stay because they felt better when they switched into this diet. And this helped me so much, not to realize that a year, 2, maybe 3 years later, they have new symptoms that they're never thinking is the diet that transformed their life could be causing, but it's true. Yeah. So I'm not a believer in staying on the same diet. No ancient culture ever stayed on the same diet. They were forced dietary changes, seasonal variations, winter, summer, animals leaving, you know, different migration, lack of water. You know, they were forced into feast famine. So the point is even seasonally, we need to change what we're eating, higher healthy carbs, lower healthy carbs, higher fat, lower fat. I mean, all of these things I believe is variations that really we know now can actually change your microbiome, turn off bad genes. So varying your diet is, I believe, as important, if not more important, than even the diet you eat, monthly, weekly, and seasonally.
This episode of The Medicine is brought to you by Immune Intel AHCC, which is my own private label. If this is the first you're hearing about it, AHCC comes from the mycelium, or root-like structure, of shiitake mushroom. It is the most clinically researched functional food in the world, with over 30 years of clinical research behind it. AHCC is really the main tool that I use to help people get out of suffering from things like HPV, autoimmune disorders, cancer, liver failure, skin disorders, fatigue, HIV, herpes, and much more. If you're thinking, how does one thing work for all of these issues? It's because AHCC delivers intelligence to your immune system. Then your body actually does the work of healing the disease. If you want to learn more about AHCC, and in my opinion, you should, you can go back and listen to episode number 3 of this podcast, where I dive deep and answer all of the major questions about AHCC. If you or someone you love needs AHCC, you can find it linked below in the show notes or on my website, getmimifit.com, in Mimi's store. This may just be the thing that you've been searching for. Cheers, boo.
Wow, that's really good. Yeah, I heard you once say that the best diet or the best way of eating is the one that you're currently not doing. Just in, you know, just not saying like, oh, you need to jump, but like that you need to keep that metabolic flexibility, that you need to keep your body almost guessing and like being able to adapt. Yeah. And I just thought that was so wise. How do you, like, for me specifically right now, I've been, you know, I've been more plant-based for the last 2 months. How do you know when you should switch to the next thing? And how do you know what the next thing should be?
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be anything except different, right? In a healthy diet, right? I'm not telling you to, you know, for 2-3 months to eat standard American diet, but
yeah,
you know, switch it up. Here's a good indicator. If you're bored with the diet you're on, switch, right? If foods are getting more plentiful because it's spring and there's berries, new foods, switch, right? I mean, you know, if you're getting different cravings all of a sudden, switch. You're sick of eating meat and fat on a keto, switch. So, yeah, you know, or some people, type A's, are more regimented. They need to be told when to, you know, then they'll just put it in their schedule. Okay. You could do it 4 times a year with seasons. You could switch. Some people like to switch more often. You could do it every other month, you know, switch. Okay. You know, I mean, really, in mine is a lot of travel. You know, oftentimes I'll switch my diet because depending on, you know, if I'm doing a lot of traveling, maybe it's easier for me, depending on where I'm going, to be higher healthy carb, or sometimes it's easier being lower. I mean, honestly, so my schedule can determine my variation, but just vary your diet. What works for you.
Okay. Yeah. So that's going to teach us to kind of listen to those cravings. Am I craving more berries? Am I craving more meat right now? Am I craving more greens? Just listen to those innate cues. That's really good. Can you speak a little bit about the benefits of fasting as it relates to maybe weight loss and longevity? And is fasting for weight loss okay? Because I've heard some, quote, experts say you shouldn't use fasting as a weight loss tool. Can you speak on that?
If you're bulimic or anorexic, I'd say don't do that. I could create, you know, some, you know, more mental battles there. But the bottom line is it can be used for weight gain or weight loss. I mean, how is that even possible? Because of the way fasting works, especially extended fasts. And I like 5-day fasts. And for people that have different challenges, I like multiple 5-day fasts. Maybe it's one a month, but not just water. So I love pure water fasting, very, you know, relying on innate intelligence, love it. But partial fasting is amazing, where you take 5 days and just lower your calories and protein. And I talk about that and how to do that in my book. Walter Longo made the Prolone partial fast very well. He calls it the fasting mimicking diet, or the Prolone diet, which is a partial fast in that it's lower calorie and lower protein. So in a lot of his studies and others show that you get a lot of the fasting benefits just by eating less and eating less protein. So oftentimes I'll do a water fast for somebody once a month, 5 days, I should say one time a month. Next month, partial fast. Next month, water fast. Or maybe it's for a year. I typically do about four fasts a year, two partial, two water on average. So look, I believe this. Our genetics are set up to fast. We turn bad genes off. We do. During a fasting state, you downregulate genes that stressors turn on, whether it's diabetes, heart disease, weight loss resistance, whatever. We can turn them off during fasting states. We also change our microbiome. We reset it. So the doctors that I train would tell you, how do we fix these really bad gut cases? Fasting strategies. You know, and again, we're genetically made to fast. There's so many benefits. Also something massive, great that happens in a fast, especially extended fast, is that your body will eat bad cells, cells that could end up cancer cells. Cells that are senescent, meaning they live too long, they drive inflammation, drive autoimmune, and all the stuff we don't like. Your body in a fasting state, intuitively, so smart that it will go after the bad cells and get rid of those cells and not the, get rid of the good cells. So it's that smart. Here's the best part, is when it gets rid of one of these bad cells, it stimulates a stem cell and creates a new one. So imagine like autoimmune conditions, which are so prevalent today, or any immune condition, it will take out that hyperactive immune cell or the immune cell that's just hanging around, not doing much. It's a senescent cell, lives too long, gets lazy. And it takes that cell, eats it, uses it for energy. And then it recreates via a stem cell, a new immune cell that's young, active. It's not hyper responding. So that's how fasting strategy, yes, heals guts, but deals with autoimmune, you know, deals with a lot of these more severe conditions. So again, adding different fasting strategies in your life is imperative to stay well, but also to get well.
Gotcha. So it is okay for if somebody wants to lose weight in a healthy way, fasting is not necessarily a bad thing or like...
No, so I believe... It turns off the bad genes. It can upregulate. Something else that happens in a fasting state that is good for weight gain or weight loss is you get a hormone optimization. So you get an optimization of your hormones. Your cells become more hormone sensitive. And that is really the key to losing weight. If we can get our cells hearing our hormones, most weight loss problems today are hormone problems. So fasting is a natural way of just balancing that because your cells become more sensitive to the hormones. So I always say you don't fix hormone problems by taking hormones. I mean, sometimes it's necessary, but you do it by getting your cells to hear the hormones better. Yeah. Fasting strategies does that. And then I mentioned weight gain. Fasting, because it fixes the gut is oftentimes why people can't gain weight. And by fasting and fixing the gut, you're able to assimilate food and therefore gain weight. Also, the autophagy. When you get rid of the bad cells, your body will get rid of bad muscle cells, and then it recreates the stem cell. It recreates new muscle cells that recover better. Mm-hmm. So you can gain weight and lose weight by fasting. Now, again, you know, if you're somebody that has a toxic-driven hormone problem, which is the first part of our conversation, you know, then fasting alone would probably not be the best strategy. You would need to do the cellular detox as well as the fasting.
Yeah. I'm so fascinated by this because there's so many like moving parts to it. I can see how somebody would get overwhelmed with it and use bad information. So I'm definitely going to point people to your book as it just lays it out. So you can have like a physical copy of something like like a map, basically. I'm so glad you have put that information into the world. What is one myth about fasting that people think it's this, and what would you say?
Yeah, there's a lot of myths. That you'll lose all your muscle is a myth. Because you know, your body's too smart for that. What studies showed, you may lose a little muscle just in the, you know, first, the very beginning, even under 24 hours. But again, it immediately raises growth hormone, which stops muscle loss. And then it starts to basically get your cells hearing your hormones better, and therefore it protects your muscle. And then you start only getting rid of bad muscle, if there's any muscle to be lost, bad cells. It's that smart. So that's why I always tell people, don't fast, you know, just one day without getting yourself a little bit, you know, your cells used to using fat when you're not eating, because then you'll avoid any muscle loss. So that's what my book does, right? Chapter one is how to become fat adapted. Chapter two is how to eat less often. Chapter three is intermittent fasting daily. Chapter four is diet variation strategies. Yeah, so you get the point. Is it kind of walks you through, you know, you don't just run a marathon. You don't just fast for 5 days on water. You could, but your results aren't going to be that good necessarily, or as good as they could be. And you may not finish. Just same with the marathon. You might finish the marathon if you don't train, but I doubt it. Yeah. And your results definitely would not be as good. So my book takes you through how to, you know, really do a 5 day fast properly, even if it's a partial fast. So it walks you through the how to. So a myth is muscle loss. Another myth is that, you know, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to be hungry the whole time. No, you actually lose hunger about day three. You know, your body becomes fat adapted, and you know, then that really, it goes away. It really does. So, I mean, there's so many myths around fasting. Is I'm going to screw up my metabolism. For, you know, not, it's, fasting is something that all of us are genetically designed to do. It's a survival mechanism, and God would never have designed us with a survival mechanism as important as this if it was just going to mess up your metabolism. Yeah. It's what you do after and before the fast that could mess up your metabolism, and my book talks about that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. No, I totally agree there. Can you give just a couple tips, and then I want to get into those specific situations. You know, if you have a shorter like allowance or hour, say it's 4 or 5 hours, for me specifically, I was eating, you know, not enough calories for me for how active I was, because I didn't feel like I could get in enough food in that time. And so can you give some tips for people on like how to make sure you're getting, if I need, you know, 2100 calories a day, but within two meals, is that, how do we do that?
Well, look, you know, bodybuilders now intermittent fast, right? Who need major calories, but they still want to take advantage of this autophagy, getting rid of bad cells, because it helps them recover from their exercise, because exercise, it's not the exercise, it's the recovery that matters most. So if we can get rid of the bad cells that aren't recovering and via stem cells make new ones, well, that transforms your workouts, your recovery, your physique, everything that you desire. So they're starting to fast and then eat these major calories in an eating window of 6 to 8 hours. So that may mean you just have to eat three meals in that 6 to 8 hours versus the two that you were eating.
Even if you're not feeling those hunger cues, like I would eat a meal, I'm like, well, I need to eat again just based on my
calories. Right, do it. But just do it in a 6 hour window as an example. So, you know, maybe you have to eat more often in the 6 hour window. So the Hodge twins did some videos some years ago, bodybuilders, and they were taking in 6,000 calories in a 6 hour window. I mean, you know, so the point is that, and again, their goal wasn't health. Their goal was putting muscle on and in maintaining a lean look, and they achieved the goal. So they still needed a lot of calories. They just did it in a smaller window, right? So they had to eat in that eating window. When you look at, you know, I visited a tribe in Africa. They ate about a 3-4 hour meal. They ate one meal a day.
Oh, but wow.
They sat down for 3-4 hours and they ate during that 3-4 hours. Very European, very Italian as well. You know, they'll do cappuccino or, you know, shots of espresso during the day, don't even eat. And then boom, they eat as a family for 4 hours. We have an Italian restaurant here. It's our favorite. It's a 4 hour meal, but it's the only meal you eat. But I promise you, I have at least 2000 calories in that.
Okay.
Meal, trust me. You know, and I do it one meal, but it's a 4 hour meal and it comes out in courses. Right. So you just have to, you know, change the way you eat. Trust me. So look, all you had to do is add a few feast days in a week. And then even your restricted days, you didn't need say 2000 calories every day. You know, you just needed a few days of maybe 2500 calories.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, so studies show even if you went with 1000 calories, you know, 3 days a week, you'd have been fine as long as you had the higher calorie days.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool. Thank you so much for that. Now we're going to get into, I mentioned a couple scenarios that I feel like are very common, and I basically kind of want you to do some on the spot like coaching for this type of person or scenario. So say for an active early 30s woman, no pre-existing conditions, she's mostly healthy, eats mostly whole foods, tries to stay away from processed foods, severe bloating and stomach pains after eating even healthy foods like nuts and berries and things, tries paleo but feels tired, constipated, tries vegan but feels hungry all day, currently taking a one-a-day multivitamin and a store-bought generic probiotic. Should fasting be utilized to help heal her gut? There's obviously some level of gut dysbiosis going on. Should fasting be utilized, and how, and what stage of her healing?
It could be, but you know, this person sounds like they have SIBO, actually, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. When healthy foods give you bloating after you eat them, consider small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. There's a breath test you can do. There's also one called IBS Shore, which looks at antibody levels, because SIBO can happen after toxic insults, infections in your jaw, food poisoning, and then 3 months later, you end up with SIBO. So people don't ever correlate it to the food poisoning they got 3 months ago, or they had this dental thing happen, and now 3 months now they have this bloating after meals. Consider that. This person also has to consider an upstream toxic issue with those that I always ask what's driving the dysbiosis, the bloating, right? There's something typically driving it, toxic related. So that has to be considered. Fasting, I couldn't fix a gut condition if it weren't for fasting.
Okay.
Again, it's just a matter of what, you can't fix the gut condition, say, just by giving a probiotic. Quite the opposite. You said this person was actually taking a probiotic, one of the first things I would do is take them off of it.
Yeah.
Because it would make SIBO worse. And they're typically monoculturing because they've been on it for months, the same one. But fasting strategies have to be a part of this. Because remember, you're eating the bad cells. We have to get rid of those gut cells that are bad, you know, yeah, that are inflamed, and replace that gut lining. And we have to close tight junctions. Fasting strategies. We have to reset the microbiome. So again, it would have to be a part of the plan, but for this case, it sounds like detox has to be a part of the plan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that helps. Mm-hmm. So with the regular like intermittent fasting and feast to famine days, she could either do like the weekly 5-2 protocol or monthly or, you know, seasonally, or should she start with one or the other?
Yeah. I mean, I would start with some weekly variation.
Okay.
And go. Listen, when you're dealing with gut, this person, this case would say, I feel better when I don't eat. So
exactly.
We got to listen to that innate intelligence, right? Because when they don't eat, we're not inflaming the gut, right? Yeah. So as we work upstream, getting rid of whatever toxic sources there are, you know, going without food is going to be beneficial. We still need the, you know, times where we actually feast and famine.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, last scenario I'm going to give you because I want to be mindful of time for you. 30-year-old healthy male, super fit, works out a lot, no symptoms or conditions, eats a warrior style. So usually that window is like from 5 to 8:30 p.m., usually two meals. Most days has black coffee with some superfood supplements and medicinal mushrooms in there, probably equaling about 200 calories until he has his first warrior type meal. Wondering if there is any cellular and longevity benefit with this approach, and he's not doing it for weight loss, so how can he optimize his fasting protocol to really that cellular autophagy and the longevity? What is he not doing that he should be, or how could he change it up for that?
Yeah, adding longer fasts in, 5-day fast, one or two a year would transform this person, because you have to get rid of this unrecovering muscle tissue. And when you fasting like that through autophagy is the way to do that. The hormone optimization, when we look at, I said growth hormone starts to rise up day one of a fast. Well, it hits max day five. So we get this huge growth hormone spike day five, which can carry on. So, you know, and again, renewing your gut is going to help this person, mm-hmm. his whole immune system, right? So renewing the muscle cells, I mean, all of that gets reset. You hit on day four of extended fast, you hit max autophagy. So that means your body is just literally just crushing bad cells. Mm-hmm. Remember, when you want to be healthier, we want to get rid of senescent cells. These are cells that live too long. Immune cells, muscle cells, organ cells. We want to get rid of senescent cells. And thereby fasting, we're taking out those older cells and we're replacing them with new. We're okay. genetically programmed to fast. We need to drive that healing and reset is probably a better word for it, doing longer fasting.
And you like just for these 5 days, you like just water, correct?
I do. I love water fasting, but if that intimidates you, do a partial fast first, right? And then, and again, my book, you know, instead of just fasting, this is what you do a month ahead of a fast. Here's how you fast. And then chapter 7 is what you do after the fast. I have that book and I have that program for that very reason.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you so much for that on the spot coaching. I have one last question for you. This is a personal question, just a little look inside what's current for you right now. The Medicine Podcast and our, I guess, slogan would be a disease prevention for body, mind, and relationships. And I want to hear from you. What currently for you is the medicine, or just one tip that feels like medicine for your body first, and then mind, and then relationships?
Gosh, you know, I hate that it sounds like, you know, this was just planned, but it wasn't. But fasting, one 5-day fast a year will transform all of those things. You know, when you look, this is the oldest medicine on earth, Hippocrates, Plato, fasting. They all, you know, every religion on the planet disagrees on just about everything, even prayer, except one thing, fasting.
Right? Yeah,
so this is the oldest therapy, I believe most effective known to man. So oftentimes I fast not even for the health benefit, it's the mental benefit and clarity I receive if I'm trying to solve a problem, or if it's, my wife developed a Facebook page called Fasting for a Purpose. It was because we were at a point with our son where we couldn't solve his problems. So we fasted. And by the way, biblically, that's what most fasts were created for, the mental and spiritual aspect of what fasting does. So when you look, this is replete through the Bible, but when someone was up against a problem, a situation bigger than themselves, they would fast and pray. Mm-hmm. And the one that I love is Jehoshaphat. Three armies were coming against Israel out of the north, literally, that would devastate them, far bigger than they were. And Jehoshaphat fasted the whole culture. They fasted as a community together, and they prayed, and God delivered them. You got to read the story. It's fantastic. But there's so many situations where fasting is what we do when we're up against something bigger than ourselves. So we did that for our son. But, you know, it offers a deliverance. It offers a mental, spiritual deliverance that we can only get in a fasting state. The physical components we discussed. So physical, chemical, emotional, all of it, through a fast. So
what about for your relationships? We got body and mind there. What about for your relationships? What feels like the medicine for you currently for your relationships?
Yeah, not fasting on this one, because, you know, you might get a little bit snippier in your relationships. Yeah, that's not a good one. You know, but here's that one is, you know, start every day. I guess I would ask what relationship, but I'm going to think of a spouse relationship in this one. Start every day, my wife and I do, in prayer. We do. We start our day together. And that is the medicine for, I think, every relationship. I mean, if that's the only time you spent with her or he that, you know, in a day, it will transform your relationship.
Yeah, I love that. So good. Oh my gosh, you guys, I hope you just were taking notes the entire time. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Pompa. You are an extremely busy man. Thank you for giving to us just a little piece of you. Everyone, please go check out his website and his book. They will both be linked below, along with discount codes. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you so much. You guys, go spread some light and think about fasting in the healthy way that he lays out. We'll see you next time. Bye.